Mino Lion Media presents Pregnancy Pearls. Meet Dr. Nicole Plenty, a double board certified OBGYN and high risk pregnancy expert. She's brilliant, well researched, and feisty. Growing tired of seeing complications of pregnancy that could have been prevented, she wanted a way to empower women through knowledge. Because as she says, all doctors aren't created equal. This quest to educate women birthed this podcast, Pregnancy Pearls with Dr. Plenty.
Thanks for listening to Pregnancy Pearls Podcast with me, Dr. Nicole Plenty. So if you keep up with the podcast, you know that I did not record last week. I missed you guys. So the schedule just got ahead of me once I arrived to Japan. So yes, I've been in Japan since last week and I had a ton of fun. One of the OBGYNs from the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists that represented at the Japanese Society for OBGYNs National Convention, actually International Convention. And I just love Japan. Everything is so clean. You can eat off the streets if you want to. There are no trash cans on the street. And of course, the food was absolutely divine. But with fresh sushi, there were several pregnant women who were attending the conference internationally wondering what they were going to eat. So I thought we probably should chat about that since everybody's always wondering what to eat. And I get asked a lot of questions about what to eat. Now, we talked about this a little bit in season one during an episode called Pregnancy Myths. So go back and check out that episode as well. But today we're going to get into a little bit more detail. We'll break down some of the food groups and why you can or cannot eat certain food groups. So let's start off with the basics and the biggest things that you should avoid in pregnancy. The first thing that you should avoid eating during pregnancy is fish. And not all fish are bad, okay? You should limit fish like swordfish, shark, king mackerel, and tuna, gray bee tuna, to about one serving per week. So you can eat it, but only one serving per week. And this is because of the amount of mercury. So these four fish types are types I usually tell my patients to not even try to eat, right? Because in America, we don't really do well with serving sizes. We don't do well with serving sizes. And serving size for a piece of fish is usually 4 to 6 ounces. And if you're like me and you think, oh, fish is healthy, I'm going to put like 2 or 3 pieces on my plate. That's not good, right? So you've already eaten more than one serving size. So I tell people just avoid shark, swordfish, king mackerel, and gray bee tuna through your whole pregnancy. Just don't eat it, okay? These are fish that contain way higher mercury than the rest of other type of fish. And mercury, if you remember from science and chemistry, is a type of metal that can cross the placenta and it causes central nervous system damage. So for babies that are born to moms that have consumed a lot of mercury, they can have issues with learning, they can have issues with hearing and vision loss. So since we don't want that to happen and we know that mercury is a known cause of this type of badness, do not eat these fish, okay? In general, like just don't eat them. It does say one serving size. So if you're not in the US and you actually are weighing your fish, that's fine. Just try to limit that, those four type of fish as much as possible. And just as a reminder, they're shark, swordfish, king mackerel, and gray bee tuna. So these are going to be what you're going to be eating in like nigiri, sashimi, your sushis. This is where you get in that. But if you're eating it in a roll, you're not going to have a serving size, right? So gray bee tuna, you might have a little bit of tuna. And if you're eating in the US, you probably aren't getting gray bee tuna. So you should be less concerned about that. But if you're just eating it on a plate, yeah, less than one serving size. And I would try to avoid it altogether if you can. Two, the CDC, says, don't eat undercooked or raw fish at all. Now, this is just because of how it's prepared, you guys. It's not that you have to avoid all raw fish. You have to avoid all sushi. It's because of how it's prepared. So if you're eating it in sushi, that's very clean, very well prepared. You can eat other types of raw fish. So if you're eating a sushi roll with raw salmon, you can eat that because you have to have a certain standard to be able to have a restaurant open. But if you are preparing it at home, that's when you have to be very careful about how long you're keeping this raw fish in the fridge, how you're preparing it, what's around, and how clean your surfaces are, because they can carry contaminants and can carry bacteria that can get you really sick. That is why the CDC says to avoid undercooked or raw fish. It's not that it has too much mercury in those types of fish, other than the four we just talked about. It's because of how it can contain bacteria. So if you go into a restaurant that is a high-grade restaurant, you should be fine eating sushi other than those types of that contains those type of fish. But if you're preparing it at home, that's when we have to be very careful and make sure it's very clean. Third thing, undercooked, raw, and processed meats. Okay, we're having a theme here. Undercooked, 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 raw. Okay, that's the theme. All raw meat and poultry should be thoroughly cooked before eating. Okay, you should not do beef that is raw. Okay, this is not the time to eat it rare. You can eat it medium rare. You can eat it medium, but you want to make sure that it's heated at least to the point that it is killing all of the contaminants. So it's very important that it meets those recommended standards of at least being medium rare. These undercooked foods, if they're not heated to a certain amount, there are different bacteria that can live inside of them. And I mean, inside of them coming from the grocery store to your home, not even just cleaning the surfaces at your home will be a problem. It's how it's packaged from the store. E. coli, Salmonella, Campylobacter, Toxoplasma gondii, all of these things can be within food and it needs to be cooked out, okay? Now, hopefully that's not the case. We do have salmonella scares every once in a while, but if you're eating things that are fully cooked, you've cooked all that bacteria out. Now, washing your hands, your cutting boards with soap and water can reduce exposure to these types of bacteria in addition to making sure your food is thoroughly cooked, okay? This is also why you should limit the consumption of processed meat because they're not cooked, they're processed. Okay. So when I tell people, you know, people are like, I can't eat bologna at all. Yeah, you can, but just put it in a skillet or heat it up before you eat it. Heating it is going to kill those bacteria so that you can consume it without getting really sick. Why is this important in pregnancy than outside of pregnancy? It's not because all these things cross the placenta. Some of these bacteria do, like toxoplasmosis does, and can cause your baby to have issues with little calcifications in the liver, can cause also issues with the brain. So we want to make sure we're not consuming things that can cross the placenta. But even if it doesn't cross the placenta, you are immunocompromised in pregnancy. And because of that, you are more prone to get sick. The immune system is set up that way. So people with autoimmune conditions, they don't have as many flares in pregnancy because their immune system is suppressed. After they deliver, their immune system revs up because it's going back to its normal production of antibodies. So your immune system is lower, which is good, so you won't fight off your baby while it's growing. But it's bad because you can't fight off bacteria and viruses either. So that's why there's this big CDC push to make sure that you are eating fully cooked things that don't have bacteria in them, to make sure that all of your surfaces have been wiped down with soap and water after you prepare your meat and your vegetables, to not have salmonella and other bacteria that can live in meats be contaminated all over your kitchen. Fourth thing that you have to watch out for when you eat, soft cheeses. The CDC says avoid feta, brie, things like Mexican style cheeses and like queso fresco, things like that you should avoid. And it's not because there's something in that the cheese is going to cause something bad, like a birth defect. It's because of the bacteria again, unpasteurized cheeses. Now, a lot of cheeses in the States are pasteurized, but you want to look at the package and see if it's pasteurized or unpasteurized. Unpasteurized cheeses can contain a lot of bacteria, and some people like that more because it can allow for more fermentation. But we want to make sure that it's pasteurized because that's how we know it has the standard not containing bacteria. Like, it's been cleaned. Okay. So it's the pasteurized cheeses that you can do. Unpasteurized, we don't want you to do. So if you're in the U.S., most of your cheeses are going to be pasteurized. But if you're outside of the U.S., just make sure that if you're preparing cheese naturally and that's all you have, because that's all you eat is unpasteurized, it just needs to be very clean. We need to make sure it's as clean as possible, because these cheeses can contain some bacteria that can either cross the placenta, like toxoplasmosis, or that can get you really, really sick. So it's not the cheese itself, it's the unpasteurized cheeses. The next thing on the list, raw eggs. Okay, so we're still on a theme, raw, undercooked, raw, raw, raw. So avoid foods that have raw eggs in them, homemade mayonnaise, hollandaise sauce, Caesar salad dressing, all of these things that can have raw eggs in them that are not regulated, you should avoid. And that's because, y'all, the bacteria, okay, it's not that the eggs are bad. It's, we don't know how long it's sitting on the counter. We don't know what kind of bacteria it's in it, and we don't know who prepared it. And y'all know y'all don't eat everybody's potato salad anyway, because you don't know how clean their kitchen is. Think about it in that same way, right? When you're pregnant, think about eating anything that has raw stuff in it, like eating out of somebody's kitchen that has a whole bunch of cats that climb on the counter. Okay, think about it like that. We don't want contaminants in it. So it's not the fact that the egg is raw. Okay, so if you want to eat something over easy, fine. If you're at a restaurant, are you preparing it yourself and you know you're, you know, everything's clean and you're cracking it straight from the egg, great. But other things, these homemade things that are going to sit for a while, can sit in the refrigerator for a while, yeah, it can have stuff in there, bacteria in there, and we want to avoid you consuming that. Next, unpasteurized milk. Again, unpasteurized milk. Here, most of our milks are going to be pasteurized. Okay, there's a lot of, you know, bacteria in unpasteurized milk that can make you sick. So that's why we don't want you to do unpasteurized stuff. You also can have stuff that crosses the placenta, like we already talked about. So we want to make sure it's pasteurized. 7, honey. Honey. Avoid honey while you're pregnant. And you also should avoid giving it to kids. Some people put like honey in milk. Mm-mm, don't do that. Especially not to a child. Because you can have bacteria that can have, you know, release botulism toxin that can cause babies to be floppy, okay? Because it affects the nerve cells. And so babies, you know, can be very, very floppy. And if you're floppy and it affects your nerves, it can also affect the nerves that regulate your diaphragm and breathing. So that's why we don't like honey to children, especially children under 1. Think about it. Botulism toxin, same thing as Botox. It paralyzes the nerves. That's why you don't have those wrinkles in your forehead. It relaxes them because there's not a stimulation of the nerve. It blocks the nerve stimulation there. So then your forehead is smooth. We don't want that happening in the baby. So that's why you need to avoid honey while pregnant and in children under 1. Now, it's really important that we eat very clean in pregnancy because, like I said, we're trying to avoid the theme raw, undercooked, unpasteurized. Raw, undercooked, unpasteurized. We cannot eat those type of foods because of the bacteria that's in them, some of which can cross over to the placenta and affect the baby in various ways. But we want to make sure that we're eating lots of fruits and vegetables if we possibly can. Now, the exception is if you're a diabetic, you know that you have to limit the amount of fruit that you eat. Half your plate should be veggies. A fourth should be your protein or meat. And a fourth should be your carbs, your carbohydrates, like your rice, your pastas, your potatoes. But fruit is a carb by itself. So we have to limit the amount of fruit that you eat. If you're diabetic, I tell people, you know, make sure you eat it in a cup so you know exactly how much you're eating. Cut your fruit up, put it in a cup, know how much you're eating. But in general, if you're not a diabetic, you should be eating a lot of fruits and vegetables, but you do have to watch out because there are a lot of things that have contaminants in them and pesticides. And contaminants and pesticides are bad, right? They're bad for you. And so we don't want you to eat anything that can potentially cross the placenta and cause issues with growth in the babies. So strawberries, peaches, nectarines, apples, grapes, cherries, pears, tomatoes, celeries, bell peppers. Those are things that in the U.S. are grown with a lot of pesticides on them. So when we can, we want to make sure we're eating the organic version of this, because our organic versions aren't going to have pesticides. And if you're like, oh, I'm not buying those organic apples because they cost three times as much as these regular apples over here, so I'm going to get these regular apples over here, that's fine. Just make sure you are cleaning your fruits and vegetables before you consume it. You would think that that would be something that everybody does, but apparently people don't do that. Like, people actually pick up things in the grocery store and just bite the apple and keep on walking. Don't do that. Like, you need to take your fruit home. You need to actually put it in, rinse it off, put it in water, let it soak, or you can get your little fruit brush if it's like something like an apple or orange, and use your brush to clean your fruit. There's also veggie sprays, which is almost like a vinegar-based spray that you can spray your veggie to clean it, and then you rinse it off after that so that you know that your vegetables are clean. The veggie spray is really helpful when you talk about cleaning things like berries, right? Strawberries, things you can't scrub. Things like berries, blueberries, strawberries, raspberries. It can remove a lot of those toxins. If you're like, that veggie spray is really expensive, just add a little vinegar to the water. Rinse, you know, put your, rinse your fruit, then put your fruit in water with a little bit of vinegar in there. That'll help get rid of all of the bacteria. Rinse your fruit again, and then you can consume it. That way you're getting rid of the pesticides and any bacteria that's on your fruits and vegetables. Just make sure that you're cleaning your fruit and vegetables. Don't you eat those grapes while you're shopping. Mm-mm. Take those grapes home, put them in the sink, clean them before you consume them, okay? Especially when you're pregnant. That's very, 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 very important.
Particularly during the first trimester, it's extremely important to eat green leafy vegetables and fortified whole grains. Now, these are rich in folate and B vitamins. Now, folate is essential, like it's crucial. And consuming enough in the first trimester helps to reduce the risk of spina bifida or open or tube defects. Now, you may see this abbreviated as ONTD on your genetic screening report, or if you have the alpha fetal protein or AFP test, this is a test for open or tube defects. Okay. So if your AFP is high, that puts you at a higher risk for open neural tube defects. And we know that most of these defects are completely preventable by just a little folic acid. So make sure that you are taking folate. And I tell my patients, start it before you get pregnant. So when I do preconception consults, before you get pregnant, I tell you to go ahead and start folate, because the central nervous system, or brain and spinal cord, are completely formed by your 12th week. So after your first trimester, you can just stop any extra folate you have, because it's not going to help. Most prenatal vitamins have between 400 micrograms and 800 micrograms of folate. Now, I always tell my patients, get a vitamin that has 800 micrograms of folate, because we know that that is more than the bare minimum. The minimum you need is 400 micrograms. We need more to reduce your risk. You can't have too much folate. You just pee and poop it out. Okay. So that is not one of the ones you can overdose on. That's not one of the vitamins that you need to avoid in pregnancy. That's actually one that's really, really needed, especially in the first trimester. So get you the higher folate prenatal vitamin. Now, if you are diabetic, meaning you have type 1 or type 2 pre-existing diabetes, then you really do need 2 milligrams of folate. Remember, the prenatal vitamin has between 400 micrograms and 800 micrograms. So you really need 2,000 micrograms if you are diabetic, because you have a higher risk of having a baby with a spinal cord defect, okay? And if you are someone that has a seizure disorder, or you're on valproic acid for something else, different people take valproic acid for, you know, migraines or other, you know, behavioral health issues. If you're on valproic acid, that can mess with folate metabolism. And so you need 4 milligrams or 4,000 micrograms of folic acid every day. So, and people think this is a big deal. Okay. So folate, we know, is the number one factor that contributes, or a lack of folate that is, contributes to open neural tube defects. And it's not just like, oh, you have a little open neural tube defect. No. This is a big deal. So if you have a significant open neural tube defect, that is exposed to amniotic fluid, that amniotic fluid over time erodes the nerves in the spinal cord. Those nerves are going to innervate or give little signals for movement and feeling in your extremities, in your bladder, in your bowel. So this can mean that you have lack of control of urination and bowel function and walking if you have an open neural tube defect. So that can really affect quality of life. It also, if you have a protrusion of that spinal cord out of the canal, that also brings the brain stem down and pulls everything in the brain down some. So that can also cause issues with cognitive development as well. So we want to make sure that we are preventing open neural tube defects as much as we possibly can, especially since we know that most of them are caused by a diet that lacks folic acid, which is our green leafy vegetables. Can also, we love spinach. We love, you know, greens and spinach and whole grain breads. These are also folic acid high. Okay. Pastas and cereals also have folate, just not as much as your green leafy vegetables. So you just want to make sure you're eating a diet that has a little bit of variety, but rich in folic acid. Now, keep in mind that if you're someone that is a vegan, you also need to make sure you're supplementing with protein. Protein is really important because people that have a low protein diet have a higher rate of having babies that are smaller. Smaller babies have an increased risk of stillbirth, okay? That's why we monitor babies for growth, okay? That's why we monitor your fundal height. If your fundal height is lagging, then you have to get an ultrasound to see how big your baby is. And if your baby is smaller, you come to someone like me, a maternal fetal medicine specialist, to look at the placenta and to look at the baby from head to toe to make sure there's nothing going on with the baby that's causing the baby to be small. Now, luckily, most small babies are just small just to be small, but there are about 10% of those babies that need to be delivered early to avoid a stillbirth, okay? And some people say, well, I'm short and, you know, my husband's short and that's why the baby is small. Well, y'all, I'm 4'11", okay? And so that's not why 100% of babies are small. So we cannot chalk it up to being constitutional or because the parents are smaller until after the baby's born. Okay, so we have to look at every baby carefully because who wants to gamble? We don't want to gamble. We'd rather monitor you closely to make sure your baby has good blood flow, to make sure your baby doesn't have any birth defect that's causing inadequate circulation, and to make sure there's not a reason that can be treated after delivery that's causing your baby to be smaller. Although some people we do look at and we say, the dad's 5'3 and the mom's 4'11, it's likely constitutional. We still monitor all people the same way because we don't gamble and we can't prove that a baby is small because the parents are small, like I say, until after the baby is here. Now, in terms of sweets, everybody always wants to know, well, what can I eat that's sweet? I'm craving sweets. It's okay to eat cookies and cake, but make sure you eat it in moderation, y'all. You can't just eat cookies and cake all day. Moderation. So we want you to eat your green leafy vegetables, your whole grain cereals, your whole grain pastas. We want you to have a nice mix of things on your plate. But yes, you can treat yourself with your cookies and your cake if you so please. Now, I'm not a pound counter. I'm not that person that's like, oh, if you're normal weight, you should be gaining, 30 pounds. If you're overweight, you should be gaining 11 to 20 pounds. I am not that person that puts my patients on this like strict regimen and like fusses about weight. Like, I think that's silly. Different people gain weight at different rates in pregnancies, and people lose weight at different rates as well. So as long as you're gaining weight, for me, that's really what I care about the most. But you don't want to overgain, okay? You don't want to do things that are like, you know you're wrong and you know you're eating cake every day and just gaining an astronomical amount of weight. So you should be somewhat mindful of how much weight you gain. Plus, if you're eating a lot of sweets, that's going to make your cells more resistant to insulin because your body is constantly releasing insulin and it's going to release more insulin with sweet, like a whole bunch of carbs, a whole bunch of sweet stuff. And so if over time your body sort of gets like, oh, there's the sweet stuff again. Okay. I'm not going to make any insulin. Okay. I'm not going to, you know, I don't even sense the insulin that's telling me to absorb this because I've absorbed so much sugar already. So you're making yourself more resistant. And remember, pregnancy is an insulin resistant state. Okay. That's why you can have gestational diabetes just in pregnancy. And after pregnancy, after the placenta is out and delivered, you're no longer diabetic, because pregnancy is an insulin resistant state. And so you don't want to do things to predispose you to gestational diabetes just because you're eating cake and cookies from 8 weeks on, right? You want to make sure you're eating a well-balanced diet with lots of fruits and vegetables, so that you're not only eating like big, you know, binge eating things that are super high in sugar and carbs, okay? Because we don't want to aid to the insulin resistant state by just bombarding your body with a whole bunch of sugar. Now that we learned a little bit more about what you should and you should not eat, let's go to some questions.
This one says, Dr. Plenty, before I found out I was pregnant, I ate sashimi and sake. About 3 weeks later, I found out I was pregnant. I'm now 11 weeks pregnant. Have I caused any harm to my baby?
All right, but you're still pregnant and you're 11 weeks already. So usually what I would do is I would have this patient come in for a consultation. At 11 weeks, we can look at the first trimester screen to see if the baby looks as if it should look, right? Make sure that all of the primitive brain looks normal. Make sure that we have a four-chamber heart. Yes, we can see if the baby's heart is four chambers at 11 weeks. Can't see much more detail other than that without looking specifically at color, but there is a lot of stuff. There are a lot of things that we can see, a lot of structures we can see. Want to make sure we have two legs and two arms, a bladder and kidneys at this gestational age. And we're also going to look at the cord insertion. Now, the cord insertion should have all the bowel back in the abdomen, but sometimes that has not happened by 11 weeks, but it should happen by 12. So I look at the baby from head to toe to make sure everything's normal. And I would also, since you had alcohol exposure, do a detailed ultrasound somewhere around 18 to 20 weeks to make sure everything's okay. But mind you, you were very early in the pregnancy when you ate sashimi and sake, and now you're 11 weeks. So I'm not sure how early, but seeing as though 3 weeks ago you had been 8 weeks, so I'm assuming you didn't just find out 3 weeks ago. If you found out before that, that's in that all or none period. So you would have had a miscarriage if you had a significant amount of sake. So I wouldn't really be that concerned. I would still go through the motions and do the first trimester look and then the detailed scan at 18 to 20 weeks. But you can rest assured that you're okay. The sashimi doesn't really scare me, because like I say, when we're eating like sushis and some of these raw fish, this is not prepared with raw fish that has a whole bunch of mercury in it, right? So now we're just worried about bacteria. So if you prepare this in your home and you're very clean, then the likelihood of you having some type of bacteria is very, very slim, because you've been sick, right? And the type of sushi that you've eaten is not high in mercury. So I would not be concerned at all. I'm more concerned about sake, right, than I am about the fish or the raw fish that you consumed. Sake is about 12% alcohol, right? It's like a good quality wine percentage of alcohol. So depending on how many glasses you've eaten, drank, that can be a concern, because fetal alcohol syndrome can be caused by any amount of alcohol. We don't know what that minimum amount is, although most data says that, you know, 3 glasses is enough to do it. But since we don't have that classified, we just tell you to avoid all alcohol altogether. But if you did that early in the first trimester, the likelihood that that has caused fetal alcohol syndrome is very, very slim. Okay. So again, I would not be as concerned early in the first trimester with exposure to sake and raw undercooked fish. Okay. I would do the look at 18 to 20 weeks to make sure that I don't see any birth defects, but there are a lot of babies that are consumed under the influence of alcohol. We get tipsy, we have a good time, we get pregnant. So don't let that bother you, okay? Don't let that bother you. Now, from here on out, I would not consume any more alcohol. I would not consume any more sake. And I would be careful with how you consume raw undercooked fish. If you're going to a restaurant that, you know, obviously has to prepare things fresh, then you should be fine, as long as you're not eating swordfish, king mackerel, gravy, tuna, or shark. As long as you're not consuming those four type of fish, you should be fine, because the rest of the fish are going to be much lower in mercury. But just avoid all the alcohol going forward. So breathe, I don't think you did anything wrong. You need to look, but I don't think you did anything wrong. I think that you're going to be just fine. All right, medical intern, what's our next case or question?
This one says, I'm a diabetic and a vegetarian. Other than protein shakes, which I can't drink because they're very high in carbohydrates, what can I do to increase my protein and iron intake?
I have this a lot. We have diabetics that are also vegetarian, so you have a diet that's low in protein. Now, there are a couple things that protein does for us. One, protein is going to make sure that you have an adequate amount of nutrition. It's also going to make sure that we don't have an increased risk of growth restriction because of lack of protein. But meat also is rich in iron. Okay, so for people that are vegetarian, I want to make sure that we're checking your iron levels, okay, or doing a complete metabolic profile. And then we can look at what's called your mean corpuscular volume to see if that's lower, and look at your overall hemoglobin to see if that's low. If those are low, then we're going to default and say, what is your percent of your iron stores and your percent of your circulating iron? And then supplement from there. But most vegetarians by the third trimester, most pregnant patients in general, by the third trimester need iron. I'm going to check your levels every trimester if you're vegetarian, and supplement as needed. So you definitely need iron supplement, which you can buy over the counter. You can buy the 324 iron sulfate over the counter and take it once or twice a day. Now, mind you, iron makes you stupid constipated, okay? Stupid constipated. So if you're going to supplement with iron, you have got to drink more water, okay? Pregnancy hormones in general, specifically progesterone, slows down movement through the GI tract, which obviously slows down digestion. And so if things are moving much slower, that gives a longer time for water absorption. And so by the time your stool gets to the colon, it's harder. Okay, so you can be more constipated in pregnancy. That's why it's really important to drink a ton of water. If you have a supplement with iron, that's going to make you even more constipated. So I tell my patients, like, act like it is your full-time job to make sure that you're drinking 5 20-ounce bottles of water a day. 5 20-ounce bottles of water a day. You can add the little Crystal Light to it or the Sani drops as long as they have no caffeine, okay? That counts as water. But you've got to get the water in. The other thing that I want you to do is to supplement with a stool softener. So you can get Colace over the counter, C-O-L-A-C-E, Colace over the counter. It's a stool softener. It is not it's not a laxative. So it's not going to make you, oh my God, I got to go. It's not going to make you do that. But it will soften your stool by pulling water into the colon. That way you can go much easier with a stool softener. So anytime I put somebody on iron, I tell them to take a stool softener. So if I put you on iron once a day, take the stool softener once a day. If I put you on iron twice a day, take the stool softener twice a day. Usually I don't put people on iron more than twice a day because it makes them ridiculously constipated. But the stool softener with the iron is going to be key. Now, you talked about, like, what can I supplement other than a protein shake? Well, you can do a protein shake, okay? There are diabetic protein shakes that you can do. Premier Protein specifically, and I'm not endorsed by them. I wish they would, but I'm not, has a lower carb protein shake. So usually they have about 14, 15 grams of carbs in them. So go shopping at Costco one day, turn the back of these shakes over. Like, no, you cannot do some of these other shakes that are high protein and high carbs. That's meant for people that's doing a lot of working out, y'all. When you work out a lot, you need carbs. Your body craves carbs because you're breaking down carbs. But if you're not somebody that's working out all the time, you need a low carb, high protein shake. There are diabetic protein shakes. They're at Sam's and Costco, okay? And they're at Walmart, okay? Premier Protein is just one of the ones I know about. There are other protein shakes out there. So go and look at protein shakes and find one that is low in carbs. You want to make sure that you're eating for a snack, if you're diabetic, about 15 to 20 grams of carbs for your snacks, about 45 grams of carbohydrates with your meals. So if you're going to eat other things that have carbs in them, just make sure you're not adding up to over that if you supplement with a shake during your meal, okay? But I would argue that you can do the shakes for your snacks and then eat your regular meal, but just make sure you keep within your carbs. So that way you're getting your protein with your snacks. So you're getting protein 3 times a day, so which should suffice. But there are protein shakes that are low in carbs. I'm going to have to do an episode about protein specifically, because people ask me this all the time, and I always tell them that like one type of protein shake, but I've tried a couple. I just can't remember off the top of my head, other than that one, which ones have low carb and high protein. So I'm going to actually do some research this weekend so that I can report back, so that you know which, what are good types of protein shakes. Okay. Hopefully I can tag these companies. You need them, tell them to give me an endorsement. But yeah, I'll look for this, because this is really common. I treat a lot of diabetics. And so this information, we do want you to make sure you're getting the nutrition that you need, especially if you're vegan and can't get the meat in. Medical intern, what's our last question?
This one says, Dr. Plenty, as a fellow Louisiana girl, is it safe to eat crawfish during pregnancy?
Ooh, our last question's from a Louisiana girl. Hey, Louisiana gal. You guys may or may not know. I don't know if I told you guys. I am from Louisiana. So I moved to Atlanta, Georgia. I'm in Atlanta. I'm practicing full-time now out in Marietta. I know people like, Marietta is not Atlanta. Well, it's a suburb of Atlanta. It's good enough. But before that, I was in Houston, Texas, and really a suburb of Houston called Katy, Texas. But I am originally from Louisiana. I practiced in Texas, now Georgia, and before Texas, I was in Indiana. But I am a Louisiana girl at heart. So this question hits home for me in so many ways. So in crawfish, I love crawfish, y'all. I love pretty much all seafood, but we're talking specifically about crawfish. Crawfish is very low in mercury. You can eat all you want. You can eat all the crawfish you want. All the crawfish boils this summer, you can go to all of them. All of them. You can eat the potatoes. You can eat the corn. You can, if you're one of those like real, if you're Baton Rouge, Louisiana, you're throwing pig feet in that thing. You're throwing cabbage head in that boil. You can eat all of that, right? The thing you need to be careful about is the sodium. Okay, so if you're somebody that has hypertension, okay, I know people think crawfish is very lean. It is very lean, but it has a lot of sodium, and sodium can drive our blood pressure up. So we need to be very, very careful. There are some people that are hypertensive and salt sensitive. Some people aren't salt sensitive, but most people are. So you really have to watch how much sodium you've consumed. So you may, if you're boiling at home, you may want to ask your hubby, whoever is boiling them, hey, can you use less crawfish seasoning, so that I'm not eating as much sodium. The other trick would be don't suck the heads, right? If you're listening, if you're not from Louisiana, you have no idea what I'm talking about. So when you eat crawfish, you're going to break the tail off, and then you're going to peel the tail to get the tail meat. And you mostly eat the tail meat. But the head is where all the juices are, right? That's the other part of the crawfish that you break out. And so a lot of people from Louisiana will suck those juices from the head. And obviously it's like salty goodness. My mouth is watering just thinking about sucking the heads, right? Oh my God, so good. But that's where all your sodium is going to collect. So do not suck the head of crawfish when you're pregnant. Eliminate the sodium, focus mostly on the tails, and go from there, okay? That will do you a huge favor. But you can eat crawfish. It's the sodium, specifically if you have high blood pressure, that we're concerned about. It's not the seafood itself. Okay. It's not the seafood itself. Of course, you can't have a beer with your crawfish, but you already knew that. You know, you already knew you can't drink during the pregnancy. All right, medical intern. Is that all our cases? And she's shaking her head. Yes. So thank you guys so much for listening to the Pregnancy Pros podcast. I hope you've learned a little bit more about what you can and cannot eat this pregnancy. If you enjoy the show, make sure to share me with your friends, rate, and comment. If you or someone you know has had a pregnancy complication or unique pregnancy situation, let me know about it. Email me at pregnancypearls@gmail.com to hear your topic or case discussed on one of our podcast episodes. Also, remember to follow me on pregnancy_pearls on Instagram or at pregnancypearls on Facebook. You can also check out the website, which is www.drnicoleplenty.com for more pregnancy content and free pregnancy downloadables. And for goodness sake, please catch up on all four seasons of the podcast. In closing, remember to advocate for yourself. No one knows your body except for you. Thanks for listening. Have an amazing week. Bye.
Pregnancy Pearls is hosted by Dr. Nicole Lee Plenty. Produced by Nicole Plenty and Janine Brunson Johnson. Executive producer Ken Johnson. Find Pregnancy Pearls on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe and rate. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice for diagnosis or treatment of individual medical conditions. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with specific questions regarding a medical condition. Pregnancy Pearls is a Mean Old Lion Media production.